You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Welcome to The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson. We are now less than 9 months away from a presidential election that could well be a rematch between President Biden and former President Trump. The former president, though, has never conceded to the current one. The transfer of power happened just weeks after the U.S. Capitol was stormed on January 6, 2021, as Congress was preparing to certify the results of the election. So what if something like that were to happen again? No concession, claims of fraud, an attack on the Capitol, but this time a split in military allegiances as well. That is the topic of the new documentary film War Game, which premiered last month at the Sundance Film Festival in Park City, Utah. In it, a number of former military and government officials play different roles in a real-time simulation of a January 6th style disruption.
Mr. President, I do think it's going to potentially escalate rapidly.
If we overreact, I think it's going to come back and it'll haunt your entire presidency, but we want to be ready if we need to react.
My understanding is they've already breached to the point of being trespassers. I think that what you need, Mr. President, you know, with all due deference to the secretary, and I completely understand what you're saying, I think what the public saw in 2021 was an underreaction. I don't think anyone is anticipating we need the full strength of the military, but we have to respond so we don't have a repeat of what happened in 2021. So that's
we'll get to our conversation with a number of people associated with the film in a moment. But first, to your comments about whether what happened on January 6, 2021 should keep former President Trump off the ballot this year. We asked you that on last week's show as the Supreme Court considered the same question, and we got more voicemails than any show we've done so far.
My name is Michael Rowe. I'm calling from Clarksville, Tennessee. Whether Trump should be on the ballot or not, I'm not affiliated with any political party, and I am active duty. Why not just let the states decide?
Hi, my name is Maria Mason. I'm calling from Clearwater, Florida, regarding Trump being allowed on the ballot. My answer is a resounding hell no.
My name's Paul from Pennsylvania, and I believe that Donald Trump should be on the ballot. Let the people decide this election.
We'll see how that case goes in the Supreme Court. Thanks so much to everyone who called in. So now to this week's topic, the new documentary War Game, which puts a number of former military and political leaders in a simulation about another January 6th, and they all play different roles. Former Montana Governor Steve Bullock plays the president, who has just won a close election, but his rival says the election was stolen. The film was directed by Tony Gerber and Jesse Moss, and was the brainchild of the Vet Voice Foundation, whose CEO Janessa Goldbeck is a Marine Corps veteran herself. I started the conversation by asking Goldbeck where the idea for War Game came from.
We had three retired generals pen an op-ed in the Washington Post after January 6th, 2021, and they were all advisors to our foundation. We are a national nonpartisan organization that represents over 1.5 million veterans and military families across the country. And one of their recommendations was for the administration to do an exercise like this. This is a very standard way of training in the military, to do an exercise where you game out situations and vulnerabilities that you could be exposed to. And we realized we had the network to put on an exercise like this ourselves, to do it in a nonpartisan manner, to involve administration officials from the last five presidential administrations, from both parties, people who are deeply concerned. Because the reality is that, as I said in the clip, the alarms are flashing red. There is an increasing amount of extremism in this country, and the military is a microcosm of our society. So when you have folks who are well-trained, who understand how to seed violence and create discord and division, and they also have military training, it becomes an extremely challenging and frightening scenario. So we really wanted to see what happens if there's another contested election, but this time rogue elements of the military participated.
And I said you're a Marine Corps veteran. Is there something in your background that you saw people that you thought maybe they would go rogue in this way? Or is this just something that a fear that existed?
Well, we know that military veterans were overrepresented in the folks who participated in the insurrection on January 6th. We know that extremism is a rising problem in our active duty forces. There have been multiple studies that examine this issue. You know, when you're serving in the military, you're serving in a nonpartisan manner. You may have your own political beliefs and values. That's one of the great beauties of the institution, is that people from all walks of life can come together and achieve a common cause. But when we have these elements in our society that are now believing that actually committing violence and trying to overthrow the duly elected U.S. government is patriotic, that's a pretty big challenge for us to tackle. And I think the military has acknowledged that it is an issue, but there are many things that they still could do.
Jesse Moss, you're one of the directors and a producer as well. Why make this into a film? Who is it for?
Well, first and foremost, to confront questions that I have, that's where I start as a filmmaker. How do I make sense of what happened on January 6th, and what is our political future? Bringing together these experienced public servants, they were asked to improvise their roles and their words based on their lived experience. And that was the exciting combination that we saw. This was documentary, live improvisational theater, dystopian science fiction, and political thriller all at once. And what kind of film would it be? What kind of story could we tell? And could we invite people to a conversation about what we all care about, which is our country, our institutions, our values?
Tony Gerber, you're also a director of this film. The issue of how to portray January 6th has become very polarizing. Was it an insurrection? Was it a rebellion? Was it an event? Was it, as Donald Trump says, a tourist visit gone wrong? He's now referring, though, to people who were convicted as hostages, January 6th hostages. How do you keep this film from being seen as political when such a large portion of this country doesn't even want to think about January 6th anymore?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I can tell you that, famously, Francis Ford Coppola said that a movie gets written three times. First time in the writing, second time in the shooting, third time in the editing. In the case of our documentary, the fourth time will be when it's released into the world, right? But I can tell you that in making this film, we really leaned away from the potential for the story of this war game in our film to be spun by QAnon voices, for example. It's important that this film brings people together. It's not a look back at the last January 6th, it's a look forward. And it's a film that's really intended not just to remind folks of a potential nightmare, but to also bring hope, right? And belief in our political system and our institutions.
It is a very different time now, though, than it was when you made this film. Donald Trump is almost certain to be the nominee of the Republican Party again for president. He has said he should be immune from prosecution, even if he crosses a line. He has said he wants to be a dictator on day one. Do you think the film should be seen in a different light now than when you filmed it?
I wish that it were less relevant in some way, but and it's true that Trump was on the periphery when we began this project, but we know that the threats that this exercise in this film confront are go beyond one person. They are a kind of cancer in our country and a division that you talked about. And I think that regardless of the outcome of the 2024 election, this is a problem that persists within the military. And the military's role, its function as this bulwark of our democracy, something we take for granted, is something we have to talk about to foresee the unforeseeable. It's sometimes hard to look at those things, but we have a responsibility to. And it's our job as filmmakers to find it in an inventive and creative way to bring you to that conversation.
Governor Steve Bullock, you're what I think we could call a moderate, former governor of Montana. What is your sense of how the average American, people in your state, view the events of January 6th and how worried they are about it today?
Just a few weeks ago, there was a poll nationally that said a quarter of Americans think that January 6th was incited by the FBI. You look at it right now, there's 171 members of Congress, one-third representing 37 states that say that are election deniers.
Well, something like 66% of Republicans in the Iowa caucuses believed that Biden was not a legitimate president.
So, yeah, where are we today in Montana or all across the country? We're at a very dangerous point. And I think the idea of the film isn't to look backwards, it's to look forward. The notion that literally 25% of Americans think the FBI created this in January 6th is such a challenge that needs to be discussed. And it doesn't need to be discussed necessarily just in Washington, D.C., right? It needs to be discussed in communities all across, red and blue, because this isn't about politics, right? This is about a country and norms and a rule of law that we all expect.
What do you think, Senator Heidi Heitkamp? You also would be considered a moderate. You represented North Dakota in the Senate. Are your neighbors in North Dakota worried about this? Should they be?
No, I think that one of the reasons why this film is so important is denial. The country's in denial, right? So we deny that it even happened. That was like a tourism problem. That was incited by the FBI, but these people are hostages. And so there's no consistency in how we're looking at it. And that's why it is so important. We found out that after the January 6th committee hearings, that people started understanding and appreciating because they saw it on television, prime time, and they watched it. And it reignited the feelings that they felt on January 6th, which was horror about what was happening in our country. That then gives, there's a period of gaslighting that goes on. That really wasn't that bad. Those folks are patriots, blah, blah, blah. We have to have events like this movie to remind people. So that's why the movie is important. The biggest enemy of protection of the democracy is people saying, it can never happen again. I'm not saying it's probable that it could happen again. Is it possible? Absolutely. When people believe that somehow along the way, something has been taken from them, that there is a rigged system, and they can't even appreciate the fairness of their elections. I want to make just one point of optimism. I watched the 2022 midterms holding my breath because a lot of the people on the ballot were selected by Donald Trump. And the question was, were those people, when they lost, going to deny the election results? All but one, they all conceded. And so that's a bit of optimism. And so when we create the idea that the norm has to be established of understanding and realizing that our elections are fair, they achieve a result that promotes democracy. But if we deny that it could happen again, guess what? We're unprepared for what could happen.
That was former North Dakota Senator Heidi Heitkamp speaking with me as part of a panel at the Sundance Film Festival in Park City, Utah. She plays the president's senior advisor in the documentary film War Game. In just a moment, we'll hear from more members of the panel, including retired Army Lieutenant Colonel and Trump whistleblower Alexander Vindman, about the issue of a split in military loyalty. Stay with us. More of The Middle coming up.
If If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This is The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Over the last several months, we've tackled a number of topics, from immigration to inflation to abortion to artificial intelligence. All of those topics have come up and will come up in this presidential election year. But the fact that we vote on those issues and can have a say in what our government does about them is based on the idea of a democracy that listens to its citizens and respects their will at the ballot box. The film War Game puts former military and government officials in a simulation in which there's another January 6th-style riot at the U.S. Capitol, and there are split allegiances in the military. In one part of the film, rogue members of the military take over MacDill Air Force Base in Florida as the U.S. Capitol is being attacked. Former Senator Doug Jones, who plays the Attorney General, alerts Steve Bullock, who plays the president.
Mr. President, we're picking up intercepted chatter among military that they're taking what happened at MacDill and now they're trying to spread that to other bases.
How many soldiers are at MacDill?
Well, they've gone rogue is what I understood.
Not that many. These are 12, you know, gung-ho killers out there who decided to take it in their own hands.
So you got
two four-star generals down there.
The concern we're getting is the chatter that this may spread, and y'all need to be aware of that.
As we continued our conversation at the Sundance Film Festival in Utah, I asked retired Army Major General Linda Singh, who plays the chief of the National Guard Bureau in the film, how realistic a split in the military is.
The answer is, you know, the military is a microcosm, and we heard Janessa say that, of society. So for us to think that it could not happen in the military, then we're putting our heads in the sand, right? We're just saying we're definitely in denial. And I think, you know, what we have to pay attention to is that, you know, we recruit from everywhere in the country. And so if we're bringing in individuals that come from all walks of life, you have to understand that we're going to get individuals in the forces that will represent things that we wouldn't see just bringing them in from an enlisted perspective, right, when we bring them into the door. And so even, you know, when I think about, you know, how we had this exercise and how things were playing out, you know, I was at the forefront for the civil disturbance in Baltimore. We talked about this very issue. We talked about what was going on across the country. So to think that, you know, it's not going to happen, that it doesn't exist, I think that we're missing the point.
What happens when that does happen? How is that dealt with when you find out that somebody is being disloyal in the military?
Well, I mean, you know, first off, we do have systems in place, but this is where true leadership has to come into place. Right. I mean, this is not about, you know, oh, I have to protect my soldiers. I have to protect my airmen. No, this is where true leadership comes into place. And leaders within the organization, you need to tamp down on that very quickly. If you don't tamp down on it and deal with it, then it is going to be pervasive. And it will ruin just the overall kind of togetherness, teamwork, everything within the organization. And so what I think is really, really challenging is sometimes leaders are afraid to tamp down on it because I want to get my recruitment numbers. And we have to say, okay, are we going to let this actually run rampant through our organization, or are we going to worry about recruitment numbers?
So is that a bigger problem now? Is there a bigger problem with recruitment? So people are being brought in that may be a problem down the road?
I think it's a bigger problem now because we've not only seen where they're allowing to be able to kind of share this voice and show up in places where they shouldn't, even in uniform, right? But even through the pandemic, we've watched uniform members say, well, I'm not going to get a vaccine. I'm sorry, the military is the most vaccinated force there is, but you're not going to get a vaccine. And so I think that we're seeing it more and more now. And we need to deal with how are we going to recruit, how are we going to retain, and how are we going to discipline? And we can't be afraid to kind of talk about those things.
But of course, in this film and in this exercise, it all has to be done very, very quickly.
Absolutely.
You don't have a long time to figure that out.
Absolutely.
Alex Vindman, you are a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel who was Director for European Affairs for the National Security Council. Do you think that any sort of coup-style split is likely in today's climate?
So I think we came up with a scenario that we thought was about as realistic as you can get. If we look at the numbers of folks that were pushed out of the military for refusing to take their vaccinations, there were 4,000 of those. There was another portion that ended up taking the vaccines, but they were very reluctant about it and have now have hard feelings and are probably further radicalized than they were 4 years ago when this first unfolded. I think the fact is that it doesn't really take a huge number of military to cause chaos. We looked mainly at National Guard units, reserves, folks that are really part of the tapestry of their societies, more so than the folks that are active duty day-to-day serving in that kind of environment. Between law enforcement, reserves, National Guard, I think there is a real possibility of radicalized elements coming up in states and attempting to interfere with certification of elections. And then even, I think, within the active duty force, that's a threat. Now, I am a big believer in the values, Army values, and the integrity of the military, and the vast majority will live up to their obligations. 97, 98, 99% will do that, but it doesn't really take a huge amount, and we need to be prepared for it. That's why this war game was so critically important to harden us for a future scenario.
Is it about the information that they're getting? I mean, is it just about disinformation, misinformation that is making them, when they've decided to go into a career in the military, be disloyal to the Constitution?
So that's why I think this may be, at least my perception is that this is a bigger threat in the National Guard and the Reserve, where you're not, your day in, day out life is not within the institution of the military, which has, it does have kind of a moderating, kind of homogenizing effect. You don't get as many radicals coming out of that segment. There are, but just maybe not as many. Now, the folks that do this on a less habitual basis, do this, they're part of the, there are communities that are radicalized. They're part of the information loops that are being targeted by the MAGA movement, by foreign entities on a day-to-day basis, and don't have that moderating force from the rest of the military. Those folks are just susceptible. And from my standpoint, producing something like War Game, the exercise that we did, the reports that we wrote, sharing that with the government is important. But it's frankly much more important to be able to share this with society at large, not just the interested parties in Washington, D.C., but frankly with the rest of the country that may have different perceptions and needs to be alert to, to these threats.
A lot of our listeners know who you are. You were seen as a hero by many when you blew the whistle on former President Trump and his phone call to the Ukrainian president. You've now been vilified on the right. You are an actual victim of this polarization in this country. How did that play into your experience in doing this war game?
So I've been part of the Vet Voice Foundation and Vote Vets really just about since the moment I left the military service. And the reason I made that decision in the first place is I was in uniform on active duty. I was vilified and demonized by the Trump administration and the far right. And I couldn't really do anything because in the military, I'm bound by the Uniform Code of Military Justice. I couldn't defend myself. once I was forced out by the Trump administration, the gloves were off. And they did that to themselves. So immediately, I took the opportunity to punch back. I wrote about my experiences with the Trump administration. My wife and I ended up participating in some ads indicating the threat that Donald Trump poses to our democracy, tried to be impactful in 2020. And I see it as a commitment to make sure that other public servants are not demonized and vilified the way I am. And I've been given a voice, and I'm going to use it in a constructive way. It's that simple.
Chris Jones, you are also a former Marine. You actually play someone in this film who is not loyal to the Constitution. Let's take a listen to another clip from the film and talk about it on the other side.
A new video has been released on social media by the heads of the so-called Order of Columbus, the extremist group which has long challenged the legitimacy of the U.S. government. Retired Army Lieutenant General Roger Sims, who the order refers to as the Patriarch, is claiming to have evidence of a stolen election, and the group is backing those members of the military who have appeared to have gone rogue. Now, this video was released just a short time ago. We're going to play it for you. A word of warning, some of what you'll hear is disturbing.
We have undertaken an extensive investigation of the 2024 election.
And it is Hotham who is attempting a coup to consolidate his illegitimate power and eliminate our God-given freedoms.
So the Red Cell is motivated not just by a failed candidate who's trying to steal the presidency, but also by a religious figure, someone with military experience who comes with a lot of credibility, like former General Michael Flynn, a convicted felon who spent his career fighting against insurgencies. It is not unrealistic that figures like him could play roles in an attack.
Those of you who are feeling weak tonight, those of you that don't have the moral fiber in your body, get some tonight, because tomorrow we the people are going to be here, and we want you to know that we will not stand for a lie. We will not stand for a lie.
A figure like that can be used to help recruit Americans into a belief system that justifies violence against other Americans to achieve political goals, which is the definition of terrorism.
Chris Jones, give our audience a sense of your role in this and the Red Cell and what that is.
The guy you saw talking, Chris Goldsmith, was leading myself and two other folks. And, you know, when we first got involved with this, the thing he had us set out to do was, you know, we look at the far right full time. We do a lot of work, you know, investigating and interdiction stuff. And so we just had this massive body of evidence of all these ingredients that you could use that already exist. And so, you know, a lot of our prep for this was literally going through every single, you know, not just organizations, but you know, mechanical things that you would need to conduct the types of attacks that happen in the war game, you know, and show that, like, there's very little imagination involved in our preparation for this. It was, you know, this already exists. This sentiment already exists. These organizations already exist. And then our job was really to, you know, not just play out these things occurring in real time, but, you know, generating a lot of misinformation, disinformation.
And a lot of it in a very low-tech way, like you're sending out basically the equivalent of a tweet.
Right, right. And there's like a simulated social media space. And we were, you know, when you watch this stuff in real life, you really kind of unfortunately get a knack for knowing how to do it yourself. And so, yeah, I mean, we had a very lo-fi video editing software, and that was probably the most advanced tool that we had to use. But, you know, we also made a point to go around to the physical locations and show that, you know, this isn't, you know, a scenario that someone's cooking up Tom Clancy style. This is like, we went to this place and showed that this is how long it would take us to do these things.
You were actually on Capitol Hill on January 6th documenting what was happening. What did you see there?
Oh, man. I mean, you know, that was like the worst day of my life in a lot of ways. But I think the thing that in hindsight really struck me was that this was in a lot of ways the perfect storm of, you know, most of the folks who were there who were, you know, attacking police, journalists, all this stuff, you know, they're suburban soccer moms and dads. And the right people had been given a large enough platform and the right types of narratives that really emotionally appealed have been deployed so effectively, and the right financial sources have been deployed that day to move all of those people there, that people that if you put a gun into their hand and said, do you want to shoot the president, would say no, whether they disagree with it or not, were more than willing to become violent and use that.
Why is that? What did you learn about not the Proud Boys, but just ordinary people who took part that day, broke the windows, went in, or at least went in after the window was broken into the Capitol? Why did they do that?
You know, I've looked at this stuff long enough and have been involved in enough other, you know, insurgencies and stuff like that to know that we're not that special, right? That it does not take a lot to turn somebody who's never done anything violent into part of a violent insurrection. You know, I think that you really saw how close we are. And I think my biggest thing was that, you know, underneath all of these decisions these people were making were very real. You know, we talk a lot about real and perceived grievances. There's something that these people were legitimately upset about. And the only media or you know, social way to engage with those things and political ways to engage with those things that they felt they had access to was waiting for the president to say, go to the Capitol and tear it down.
Elizabeth Newman, let me bring you in. You served in the Trump administration as Assistant Secretary for Counterterrorism and Threat Prevention in the Department of Homeland Security. You've got a new book out called Kingdom of Rage, The Rise of Christian Extremism and the Path Back to Peace. You raised alarms about the threat of domestic terrorism. What is the root cause of it, do you think?
So that would take much longer than we have time for. But in a nutshell, our country has dealt with domestic terrorism probably since our founding. There's an argument to be had that even the revolution checks some of the boxes, right? This terrorism is one form of extremism. Extremism, the definition I use is when an in-group perceives that their success or survival is threatened by an out-group, and hostile action is necessary. It's that hostile action piece that becomes so critical to your definition, because your in-group, out-group, success or survival piece is very normal in our politics. The other side, this is the most consequential election of our lifetime. If so-and-so gets elected, it's the end of the United States as we know it. I mean, we're just so used to it such that when we had an election in 2020 and now again in 2024, when you have people like Colonel Vindman saying, no, really, it's hard for us to even hear that this is different than those other political speeches you've heard in the past. But the difference is the hostile action piece, that we have individuals in our country who perceive that threat so significantly that they're willing to commit some form of hostile action. And on the spectrum of hostile action, we start down at the bullying harassment stage, might be non-criminal, so the government's not allowed to go and police that, but from a community standpoint, we can. As parents, we can. As educators, we can. We can say, stop it. That's not how we deal with our conflict. But it can pretty quickly escalate into criminal action, actual vandalism of property, actual intimidation and threats of an individual or an organization, and then you get into hate crimes, terrorism, genocide being the extreme end of that spectrum. And we have, I think, been living in a toxic soup of extremist rhetoric for a long time as a country, and then a permission structure was created some point in the last 10 years that you can take those ideas that, yeah, violence is appropriate sometimes, and actually start acting on them. And to have that permission structure, you need a couple of factors. It's at any given time in our population, there are going to be any number of individuals that we would describe as vulnerable to radicalization, but the percentage that actually radicalizes is much, much smaller, and the percentage that actually mobilizes to violence is much, much, much smaller than that. But in recent years, that vulnerable population has swelled and is huge. The polls, the surveys done by multiple different outfits, academics, anywhere from 25% to 40% of the American public believe that violence is justified to achieve your political aim. That is the definition of terrorism.
Now, if you were to ask somebody that, if you would, do you think terrorism is justified? Of course, they'd say no. But when you ask it in kind of this other language, they start to admit, yeah, I think that's possible. And so we're in a tinderbox right now.
That was former Trump administration Homeland Security official Elizabeth Newman. In a moment, we'll continue our conversation about the documentary film War Game and talk about one of the most powerful but also dangerous tools in the president's toolbox, the Insurrection Act, a law from the 1790s that allows the president to use the military against Americans on U.S. soil. More of our conversation from Sundance coming up on The Middle.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This is The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Let's continue our conversation from the Sundance Film Festival in Utah about the new documentary film, War Game. In it, a host of elected leaders and military officials had to react in real time to a January 6th style event, but worse, because there was a split in military loyalty. Some in the armed forces believed that the loser of the election was actually the winner. Former Montana Governor Steve Bullock plays the president, and I asked him who he believed the enemy was in a situation like that. Was it the ordinary citizen breaking into the Capitol, the radicalized blogger sending out orders online, or the Michael Flynn-esque former general telling members of the military to disobey orders from their commander-in-chief?
I don't know that I was thinking, who am I fighting against, but what are we fighting for? Right? That at the end of the day, and we even talk about some in the movie, you have what happened on the January 6th, but what's going to happen the day after? I think Elizabeth's talk about the in-group and the out-group, and look, many people would want to say Trump caused all this. I don't believe that. I think Trump was the result. 2006, 2016, 80% of households saw their income stay flat or go down. People start thinking, okay, I do the right thing. I'm going to live that dream, whatever that is. And when it's not getting there, that's how you get the potential for more radicalization. So I looked at it certainly at a micro level, right? That here's what's happened in Arizona. Here's what's happened in MacDill Air Force Base. Here's what the Red Cell might be doing. But as we tried to get a hold of the situation, the premise behind it is that the election was decided by 0.6%. But it was never, that 49.4% of people are bad. It wasn't about the politics. It was about sort of the institutions. And then how do we start bridging those institutions once you get control of the situation?
Elizabeth, what was the scariest thing that came up in this exercise that you think we need to be worried about as we head into this coming election?
Well, the game designers and the Red Cell were pretty realistic, at least in my understanding of the nature of the threat. And they took advantage of, I don't want to call them design flaws, it's just that so much of the way that our government functions is based on norms. It's not written into law, it's not written into policy, and we've experienced in the last 8 years what happens if somebody says, I don't want to live by those norms. And there are consequences if we, as a society, decide, whether it's down at a low level, somebody getting upset with the fast food worker and deciding that violence is the response, you know, that's a norm violation, all the way up to a president saying, I don't have to follow the rules, I am immune to the laws. That those have consequences. So I think the while there were many good outcomes of the exercise, and you'll have to go see the film to learn more about them, I was still left with this pit in my stomach that there are a lot of policy questions left unanswered. There are a lot of places that we, both in the government and then as a community, we need to be wrestling with this and coming up with answers before it happens. If you're dealing with it on the day of and you don't know what your playbook is, you're most likely going to lose, or in the way that I view it, you're most likely going to lose life.
Can I add something to Senator Steve's Heitkamp comment, though? I mean, he's right about economic disenfranchisement, but people have, and let's just admit it, they have made fear of the other American, the American that doesn't look like you, that person's getting ahead. That person's taking something from you. And those people are for that person, and I'm for you. And in a way that we've never seen, at least in my lifetime, people who would espouse those beliefs, whether they are white supremacists, have been invited to the party because they are a critical piece of a voting bloc right now. And that's something that needs to be extinguished. And so we can't leave just the overt racism of what's happening in this country out of our discussion.
We have one more clip that gets to something that is really fascinating in this film, really the crux of the film. There is a tool the president has, fully legal, also comes with a lot of consequences. It's called the Insurrection Act. It was passed in 1792, and it gives the president of the United States the power to use the military against civilians on U.S. soil in certain circumstances. Listen to this.
This is going to be a defining moment of your presidency.
Absolutely.
It is. But here's what's missing in this. We have to understand why they want to give command and control to the president. The Insurrection Act is a trap.
We need to have a further conversation.
It's a defining moment in their governorship.
We have what? Mr. President, your audience is the American public, and they want to know that Congress is coming back to certify. So we do have to come to agreement here, because time is moving on. You have to decide which way you're going to want to move.
Mr. President, 10 minutes remaining.
The president is sweating. He's going to have to make a decision.
Mr. President, are you invoking the Insurrection Act or federalizing National Guard? Neither has happened yet.
Statement.
I'm not asking you, I'm asking the president. Are you doing either?
Mr. President.
Governor Bullock, Mr. President.
Easy day, wasn't it?
Did it make you wonder whether you really wanted to run for president back in the day? No. What was going through your mind as you were considering whether to invoke the Insurrection Act?
Well, first, a lot of voices, as you could say. I mean, Jack had said at some point, the fog of war. And you didn't have all of the information along the way. As a governor, you're the commander-in-chief of your National Guard. Had got to work with folks like General Singh on a regular basis. But trying to get a hold and control of the situation while recognizing that, like, look, that's the nuclear option. When you're sending in U.S. military against your own citizens, when half of the country didn't even think you were properly elected? Like, once you go there, you can't put that back in the bottle. So it was both thinking about how do you control the situation, and then what do we do the next day to start hopefully healing this country?
Heidi Heitkamp, you're a senior advisor to the president. What were you weighing as you thought about how to advise him on whether to use the Insurrection Act?
I think when you are trying to defend democracy and you take the most extreme power that government has, which would have been the Insurrection Act, basically declaring military law, then you need to think about whether you're actually defending democracy or whether you're just taking an easy way out. And the other thing is, and you will see it when you see the movie, we had incomplete information on whether the governors were actually deploying the resources that they already had at their ready.
Which is realistic, probably, and what would actually happen.
Absolutely. And we kept saying, get the governor on the phone. You know, we're trying to parse through that whole system. And the interesting thing about this exercise is Steve and I both come from state government. We were both attorneys general. That's really where my heart is. Even though I served in the Senate, I see myself more as a state official. And I think we looked at this through a lens of state government and state responsibility in each one of these locations and the value of the federalism system that we have, where states have that autonomy. And so to take that away from states was another huge factor that led to recommendations.
Governor Bullock.
I guess, and without sort of saying how it all ends, one of the things that I was heartened with through the exercise too was, like, you had incredible military, former four-star generals involved. And, you know, and part of you might think, okay, that a four-star general would say, everything looks like a nail and we're the hammer. But how thoughtful they were in providing counsel to us as well.
General Singh, yeah, if you were in that situation at that moment and the president said, we're invoking the Insurrection Act as a person in the military, what do you do? You just have to do what he says.
Well, so that is where I have to really stand on principle, which I think I did in the exercise, right? I really wanted to make sure that we understood what that meant. And I think when you get a chance to see War Game, I want you to understand what that really means to you as a citizen. That means that you're taking someone like us and you're asking us to go and fight against our families, our friends, our aunts, our uncles, our neighbors. That happens abroad. It doesn't happen here in the U.S. Not anymore. And so that is a nuclear option that you got to be prepared for the consequences when someone pulls that card. It has long-standing, far more consequences than you can imagine.
Alex Vindman, it has already been reported that if President Trump were to win again, that his advisors have said that he is considering using the Insurrection Act on the first day if there are mass protests. Do you think that he would do that?
I think he'd want to set the conditions for being able to justify the Insurrection Act. I think, frankly, in this scenario, I think the Red Cell was doing everything they could to force the hand of the president and have him invoke the Insurrection Act and use that as justification for widespread violence. I think Donald Trump would be very eager to launch this kind of situation for two different reasons. One, because it gives him a chance to seek retribution against his enemies. And two, is that it gives him some justification for holding on to power, doing the thing that he's already declared that he wants to do, which is to become a dictator for a single day. But
only on day one.
Yeah, as we understand, if you're a dictator on day one, then you're a dictator forever until you're removed.
Jesse Moss, one of the interesting things that we haven't talked about is that this was filmed just blocks away from the Capitol. What, a year after January, 2 years after January 6th. What was that like?
I think we have these ghosts that we live with. They're everywhere. They're in our hearts, our psyches. And the very hotel where we filmed was a hotel that insurrectionists stayed in on January 6th. It's the hotel we reclaimed for democracy. That's how I like to think about it. I think the exercise exhumes ghosts and allows us to look at them and confront our fears, but in what I think is not an inflammatory and frightening way, a little bit frightening, but I think in a constructive way, because it's all of these people who I think want to protect and defend democracy. And so I think we do confront those ghosts, but in a very cathartic way. We need to do that.
Tony Gerber, what do you want an ordinary person who sees this film to take away from it? What are they supposed to do with this information? Obviously, if you were to play this in a room in Washington with policymakers or people in the military, better think about this, better be careful of that. But what about just a regular person?
Well, the challenge for us was to take this all in and make a film. So the film has to provide an emotional journey for its audience, right? That was important. And it has to deploy empathy. Because if an audience doesn't feel anything, they're never moved to action, right? So they had to care about all these people. They had to feel what it would be like to be sitting at that table, to be in President Hotham's shoes, weighing the consequences of making these decisions. So it's my hope that we have a beautiful, broad theatrical release, followed by a really healthy life on a streaming platform, and that people can see this movie with community, right? They can sit in a movie theater next to other people and feel the community, right? And that the film sparks conversation. And it's not a monolith, right? It's not suppression of different points of view. It's a launching point.
I think there's probably a lot of disagreement on this stage about particular political issues, and we come from all different perspectives on the spectrum, but I think we do have common concerns and values, and I think that's what I saw in what Janessa organized and the different backgrounds of the people involved in this that I wanted to be a part of, to witness, to try to capture, because I think that's a powerful lesson for all of us.
Alex Finman?
Yeah, so I think this is going to actually tap into a zeitgeist of the moment. Unfortunately, we're now in the world where large swaths of the American public have woken up to the dangers, have shaken off complacency about the security of our democracy. I think that played out in the way elections unfolded in 2020, 2022, this off-cycle election in 2023. People are voting on the basis of preserving democracy. And I think this film is going to strike at a moment where 1/6 is still fresh in people's minds. We're coming up on a presidential election, and people can reflect on the fact that we're still in harm's way. We're still in danger, and we need to take charge of our democracy, vote accordingly to preserve our form of government.
Elizabeth Newman, do you think that the lessons have been learned in Washington to be prepared for what could happen?
Washington is having a hard time getting anything done right now. So I had hope that we might see some laws passed to address everything from the vulnerabilities demonstrated on January 6th to our domestic terrorism architecture, which a whole other conversation, but is woefully equipped when you compare how we are able to go after international terrorism. So there's vulnerabilities in our structure that have not been fixed. Mm-hmm. I do think that the executive branch is much more attuned to domestic terrorism. They've done a lot of work to better understand it, to better use the tools that we do have to go after domestic terrorists. But it is really fraught for the federal government to try to address this mass political violence problem we have. That is, it goes to what the governor mentioned, the federal government does something, it is perceived as the Democrats are doing something to the Republicans. It is blue state against red state. Even if the civil servants in the executive branch, many of them are Republican and conservative, but we see demonization of our law enforcement agencies. We see accusations that the Department of Justice has been politicized to go after political enemies. So that's the operating space that the executive branch is in right now, damned if you do, damned if you don't. And so they're doing the best they can, but they recognize that if they overstep, it actually makes the problem worse.
That was former Trump administration Homeland Security official Elizabeth Newman, one of the participants in the new documentary film War Game, which premiered at the Sundance Film Festival in Utah. We'll link you to more about the film at listentothemiddle.com, where you can share your thoughts as well. Are you worried about another January 6th or a split in military allegiances? As always, you can leave us a message at 844-4MIDDLE. That is 844-464-3353. Or you can write to us at listentothemiddle.com. So next week, we're back with another live show as South Carolina gets ready to hold its Republican presidential primary. Only a handful of states have voted so far, but many on the right would have you believe former President Trump is already the party's nominee. So we want to know, is it time to change the way we nominate our presidential candidates? That's our topic next week. You can call in at 844-4MIDDLE anytime and leave a message or call in live next week. The Middle is brought to you by Long Nook Media, distributed by Illinois Public Media in Urbana, Illinois, and produced by Joanne Jennings, Harrison Patino, John Barth, and Danny Alexander. Our technical director is Jason Croft. Our theme music was composed by Andrew Haig. Thanks to Nashville Public Radio, iHeartMedia, and the more than 400 public radio stations that are making it possible for people across the country to listen to The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Talk to you next week.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.